Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani. Very excited about today's program. It's going to be a great one. But before we get to the actual show, let me tell you about my good friends over at ZipRecruiter. As you know, hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. What's this music? I like this music.
It's Norwegian music. We'll talk about it later.
All right, cool. Thanks, TST. Anyway, growing businesses, connecting to qualified candidates, that's what it's all about, right? Let me tell you about my good friend, Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner. You know Gretchen, right? I've talked to you about her before. She once experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her growing education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free right now at ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones, then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. How about that? With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes right now. Try ZipRecruiter for free, F-R-E-E, free, at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. And speaking of great people, like my good friend Gretchen Huebner, my man Scott Van Pelt has a great new podcast out. It's called the SV Pod, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that if you like or dislike our podcast, you should tell us in the reviews. And if you're lucky, TST just might read your review on the air. Only the good ones, though. We only like those. Anyway, without further ado, here's today's show. And remember, some of this may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, February 19, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. Beautiful one here in New York City. And as always, so much going on in the world of combat sports. Coming off UFC Rio Rancho on Saturday night, Jan Błachowicz defeating Corey Anderson. First round knockout. Did he do enough to get that John Jones fight? A lot of people, including John, seem to think so. Or is it going to go to Dominic Reyes? We'll talk about that later. A lot going on that card. A lot going on this weekend as well. What a Saturday we have coming up. Wow, UFC Auckland. What a main event. Paul Felder against Dan Hooker. When that fight was announced around 2.5 months ago, I was psyched then. Now here we are. So soon. Time is flying, my friends. Wow. I feel like we're getting all very old. Time is flying. Already mid-February. Got that. Probably will conclude around 10 p.m. Eastern. And then right after that, you can go over to ESPN Plus pay-per-view and watch Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury 2 live from Las Vegas. The most anticipated boxing match in the heavyweight division since 2002. Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, Memphis, Tennessee. Remember that? That was amazing stuff. This is better. Undefeated lineal heavyweight championship rematch. Can't wait for that. And in fact, later in the program, we will be going to Las Vegas to talk to one of my favorite people at ESPN, one of the pound-for-pound nicest people at ESPN. She helped us with our award show back in January. The great Antonietta, a.k.a. Tony Collins, is in Las Vegas right now covering the Fury-Wilder 2 fight. She's focusing on the Fury camp, but she's got great insight. She was at the arrivals yesterday and has been covering sports and combat sports for a long time, has hosted the UFC pre-fight shows on ESPN Plus. So I'm looking forward to getting her perspective about that big fight and the atmosphere and how it can compare to a big MMA fight. So that's still to come. Plus, we'll hear from TST, get his minimalist tip of the week, all that and a whole lot more. But first, as you well know, on Saturday in the co-main event, we had the highly anticipated Michelle Pejeta versus Diego Sanchez fight. And unfortunately, that ended via DQ after Michelle Pejeta landed a very clear illegal knee in the third round of that fight. And so as a result, Diego Sanchez could not continue and won the fight via DQ. And afterwards, as I talked about on Monday, Diego has received a lot of criticism for that turn of events. And I think a lot of it has been very unfair towards a legend like Diego Sanchez. And so I wanted to have him and his coach and guru, Josh Fabia, on the show to talk about, A, how he's feeling and the turn of events towards the end of that fight, the decision-making process, and the reaction to that decision. And so without further ado, let's say hello now to both Diego and Josh, who are kind enough to join us from New Mexico. Diego, how are you?
I'm doing good. And good morning.
Josh, are you there as well?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, guys, thank you very much. And, you know, I'll address you both so you don't have to talk over each other, but obviously feel free to, you know, piggyback if one person says something and you want to jump in right afterwards. Very free format, and we got a lot of time, so no worries there. But first, most importantly, Diego, because I know that you suffered a pretty deep cut as a result of the knee, could you tell us how you are feeling on this Wednesday afternoon, 5 or so days after the fight?
Well, you know what? I'm feeling great. I feel good. I'm a fast healer, recover fast. And last night I was up till like 3 a.m. doing self care, taking care of myself, healing my body. But yeah, I'm doing good, man. Aside from a couple broken ribs from the last knee that hit before I went down, it broke a couple ribs, completely broke them. And, you know, they're on their way to healing. And I was forced to stay the night in the hospital and make sure that I didn't have no fluid in my liver, in my lungs. And, you know, I spent the night and woke up and, you know, I'm feeling great today.
How many stitches did you get?
It was 9 stitches to add to the probably plus 500.
Right. Of course, throughout the course of your career. Do you remember the finishing sequence there? Do you remember those moments when you were hit with the knee?
Well, I don't remember really being hit with the knee. And I remember the moment I was hit with the knee to the rib. I felt the pop, and I dropped. Then the next knee came. I didn't know what it was, whether it was a knee, whether it was a punch. You know, I was a little disoriented. But as you've seen, you know, I was not knocked completely out. And, you know, people who want to still question the age and the strength and conditioning of my jaw and my abilities, you know, I popped back up. No concussion. And I'm feeling great today.
At any point, did you consider continuing with the fight?
It was just a like a hazy moment for me, almost like if you were in a dream. The fight was unfolding the way that it was. I was dealing with a 5 inches taller. 5 inches of reach, you know, they had it down as 2, but it was really far. I had that wrong. And, you know, he probably had me on a good 20, 25 pounds. So, I was dealing with a lot. You know, I want to start by giving Piera a lot of credit, because I truly feel that, he is the most explosive, fastest stand-up striker in the UFC right now. And he's a man with extraordinary abilities. This is why he has the abilities to throw all these backflips just like if it's nothing, you know, like no warm up, no nothing. He is a rare specimen. And, you know, nothing has, you know, happened to me other than my confidence rising in how I was able to adapt and manage and deal with this overwhelming, I was deficient, you know, I was deficient in size, height, reach. And, of course, you know, you give the guy 13 years, he's 13 years, my youth, you know, a lot was stacked up against me, but, I was feeling good in there. And, never in my career have I ever prior to my training with Joshua Fabio, I never learned real defense, and this was one of the abilities that I really truly desired, was to learn how not to take damage, especially to the head. You know, this is something that, going forward from 2017, the roughest year of my career where I received back-to-back knockout losses, I had to decide whether I was going to continue to cut weight. And if I was going to continue to fight, I was definitely going to have to learn how to avoid taking head shots. And so this has been a process. You know, the process is not overnight. And it took a lot. And my performance Saturday night was, a real true David facing a Goliath. And, people really want to give me a hard time. Like if I went out there and I got my ass kicked, that I just got, I went out there and Piera just mopped my ass with the mat. And that's not what happened at all.
But let's just talk about why people think that. Why do people think you're getting your ass kicked is because maybe the commentators are saying, oh, this is hard to watch. Oh, it's over. Oh, it's going to be over soon.
Making jokes. Oh, I've never seen anybody foam at the mouth. Mentioning it one time would have, been enough. I think they mentioned it like 5-6 times between the two of them.
So basically, you're going to dog this guy. You don't mention the spectacular entrance that this old dog has learned some real new tricks. No, none of that is said. None of it is said that, geez, maybe it's kind of interesting that this dude can switch stances, control this uncontrollable animal that no one else in the UFC would accept the fight. So talk that shit. Say that out loud. Because Diego did. Diego did take on that fight. The fight of which nobody else wanted because nobody wanted to be embarrassed. And the truth is, Diego's embarrassing performance was nothing embarrassing about it. So the spin on it in action is really why I'm hearing this narrative of, man, you just got beat up. Well, if he got beat up, why did only 3 strikes really land him? And if the scorecards can't see that, and your analyst professional experience of, I know what I'm looking at, can't see that he's blocking, moving, evading at a mastered level, Mayweather level, McGregor level, how come nobody said that? How come nobody said, man, he's really moving good on his feet? Geez, why is he getting shit for having his hand out on an opponent that has longer reach? Why is nobody saying, man, that's technically sound? He is doing some neutralizing of Piera just with movement. How come nobody said a positive word about Diego? Listen to the commentating, man. Ooh. Tell me, Ariel, as an expert, tell me if that's normal. Tell me if it's normal that since Joe Rogan talks shit about what I teach and how I teach, or just talks shit about me on his show to the MMA fan base almost a year ago, how and why nobody thinks what I have to offer is valuable. When in the video that Joe Rogan is talking shit about is exactly how come Diego is able to blend and do these movements, of which you may not be able to notice in the naked eye at full speed with a professional athlete at the level of Piera. Why has nobody said that?
Well,
why is the narrative, I'm a horrible person for helping Diego? Notice everybody's repeating the words of which the narrative is written. The platform is being used to say these things. How come they're going to call me the corner man and not the manager, the coach? Why don't you spin the story right and say I'm doing the job of a whole team?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not saying that stuff. I was defensive of the reaction towards Diego.
No, I understand.
So
I understand that.
I understand that you have frustrations,
I'm saying, totally fine. Media,
I get it.
The media experts, hold on real quick. If the media experts are only going to focus on the DQ and not on Diego's performance in any positive light. But during his fight in his hometown, where he's been set up to slaughter, where his opponent gets a five-minute championship entrance, nobody's going to throw up any red flags on your guys' side. So are you in on the on talking the shit and letting this story be oh man, this guy's just getting rocked? Because you didn't start talking about that. And Ariel, I apologize if it seems like I'm coming at you. Just like in the last time, I'm not coming at you, my friend. What I'm doing is trying to bring attention and light to something that many people are doing. And like in the last conversation, I cannot allow you to get away with it moments before without acknowledging something of the words being said incorrectly or whatever. That's my argument about this other people.
Okay, so I'm looking at the stats from the fight. Are you suggesting that Diego was winning the fight? Is that?
No, not in any way.
Okay.
Not in any way.
So the stats of the fight, let's just be very clear about the stats. The stats, first round stats as far as significant strikes, Diego Sanchez, 10 of 22. Michel Pajeda, 16 of 27. This according to the official UFC stats provider, UFC Stats. Second round significant strikes, 13 of 27 for Diego. Michel Pajeda, 19 of 37. Third round, Diego Sanchez, 2 of 15. Michel Pajeda, 18 of 27. I think most people, and then we could break it down into body and leg and head, etc. But I think you...
leg, and head. Hold on. Have you watched the video of it in slow motion?
The video of what?
He tagged you on
the
it.
The knee?
Of the fight. No, of the whole fight, man. If you haven't watched it and analyzed it in slow motion, at this point, honestly, you're part of not being able to see the mastery level of that defense and even the statistics.
But Josh, you need to take, Josh, with all due respect, you need to take a step back here for a second, okay? Just take a step back. I'm not here to break down
the video.
I'm not here to break down his performance or critique the performance at this juncture. The biggest story coming out of this fight, in my opinion, is the disrespect shown towards Diego after the fact for the DQ. He didn't throw the illegal knee. One second, can you please let me finish? Please let me finish. Diego Sanchez is a legend. Diego Sanchez is a Hall of Famer. He is someone that I have the utmost respect for. He comes in and starts talking. The problem, with all due respect, is you start coming in and throwing mud at all the media this. This is a lazy narrative. Let Diego talk for himself.
Narrative.
Excuse me. Let me speak.
Okay.
Let Diego talk for himself. He has been shown a lot of disrespect over the last 3 days. So I wanted to give him an opportunity to speak about that disrespect and how unfair that has been. The man who should be receiving the criticism over the last 3 days is not Diego Sanchez. It's Michel Pajeda for throwing an illegal strike up 2 rounds to none. Diego did nothing wrong, and I would suggest that every fighter do exactly what he did on Saturday, including Anthony Smith in a title fight last March. So you're picking a fight with the wrong guy here. I'm on your side.
No, I'm on your side.
Stop. You're doing the same thing that you don't want other people to do. You're branding the media with the same brush. We're different human beings. I'm not Joe Rogan. You got a problem with him? Take it up with him. I've got nothing to do with Joe Rogan. I want to talk about the disrespect that Diego Sanchez has received over the last 3 days. And so, Diego, I will ask you this question. How do you feel about what people have been saying about you over the last 3 days, saying that you're a coward, saying that you took the easy way out, that it's not honorable what you did? Have you seen this criticism and you feel like it is unfair?
You know, I have. I've seen this. I've witnessed all of this criticism. And along with all this criticism, I was also able to witness a lot of love. There was a lot of fans out there who had my back and was telling me, you know, you did the right thing, Diego. And, you know, as far as the criticism goes, it doesn't really bother me too much, because I know inside myself, as a veteran with more experience than any other UFC fighter on the roster, I know that I made the right decision. I know for a fact. I'm just going to say it like this. Look, I have to look in the mirror every day, Ariel, and I have to see this scar that Piero left me with. This is for life, because a man lost control of himself, did not have the awareness to know where he was with his body, where my body was. Even though my body was down on the ground and his head was, his eyes were looking right at my head. So what is this? You know, I have it on slow motion. Go watch the slow motion video. You'll see a lot. And, you know, Joshua, yeah, he does defend me because, you know, there's a lot of things that aren't said in a positive light in any way. And I think I've earned this. I think I deserve this. I think I deserve the respect to, you know, sit down with my bosses after 32 UFC octagon fights. I think I have some respect to, you know, just be respected by the company, the media, and everybody, Ariel. And so don't be offended. Please don't be offended. It's not coming at you, man. We know you support me. You have genuine care. You had my back, and along with Michael Bisping and Michael Chiesa and many, many other, you know, great Hall of Fame, Mark Coleman, you know, many people have had my back through this. And that truly does warm my heart and enlighten, brighten my spirit up. But, it is what it is. And I may have been going into the final decisions losing this fight, but also understand that I was saving myself. I was looking to not get hit with these power strikes, explosive power strikes. People, and then there's all the people saying, go back to his roots. If he would have just gone back to his roots and done the wrestling practice, just that wrestling practice, like he blew through everybody when he was doing wrestling. Wrestling. Oh man, this sport has evolved and the game has evolved, and I'm dealing with probably the most explosive man in the UFC with jumping knees that are very dangerous. You know, I've evaluated the situation over and over and over. I know that I was at a reach disadvantage. I know that I was at a height disadvantage. I knew that I was at a size disadvantage. I knew that I was at a speed disadvantage. For me to adapt up to that speed enough to not take that damage, because you guys know, anybody could talk all the shit they want, and they can, but you can. Look at the picture I posted with my face bloody from the knee. And look at the rest of my face. And you will see that the man who has received 1,638 head strikes in the UFC, I looked pretty damn clean, Ariel. And you know what? I was also in the best shape of my life, and I was hoping and thinking that, you know, Piera's going to blow his load a little bit, and then it's going to be my opportunity to capitalize and finish the fight. So even up until the moment when I was hit with the knee, I still was thinking of finishing the fight strategically, and I had not taken any real damage, man, to my head. I got kicked with some shots to the body, but nothing that put me down. You guys didn't see me getting dropped other than the knee that broke the ribs.
And on top of that, did he slow down after any of these strikes hitting him that are supposedly counted on this count of strikes on him? And again, if you haven't analyzed it in slow motion, honestly, there's no way to interpret that correctly because of the speed it was going.
But the judges don't get to watch it in slow motion, right? They have to watch it in real time.
And that's fine, but again, it's being twisted with a little bit of the sounds because of, again, the way it's perceived by the layman's eye. Well, and again, if nobody that is the commentator, who's supposed to just state the facts, and again, I will say, commentation comes all the way back from radio time, which means what? Which means that you are telling what is happening as it's happening, you are not adding anything in. And so when you're trying to fill in space, think that you're Joe Rogan, you need to be cute and a comedian and funny, and these are These are celebrity athletes that are not necessarily those people, man. Now you put them on the spot, and the one who's led the way and how they should do it has been this guy. This guy who's been overly biased in too many ways and tried to do all types of weird stuff, including what I'm talking about, the smear campaign of why and how. Tell me, Ariel, how the footage of Diego talking to the ref is out in the media so fast, okay? Released from the UFC. So either you requested it or they packaged it.
No, it was okay? It was on the broadcast. You mean when they were talking to him about Jason Herzog,
the conversation
with the referee? That was live.
Yeah. Okay, live. Okay. So that means what? Everybody would have access to take it and use it?
No.
Is that what that means? You would have to get it released from the UFC, correct or not? It's UFC material.
But what are you referring to? We watched that with our own eyes live.
No.
We're talking about the post.
Are you talking about the corner work?
No,
the post.
Well, that too, actually.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How do you feel? Look, by the way, Josh, just for the record, I defended you on this too. People saying, hey, look at the advice that he's giving him. The relationship and the language,
We know you extended.
One second. The relationship and language that a coach has with his fighter, that's between you. Who are we to say that's good or bad or to decipher that? You might have code language that I don't know what it means. I mean, we hear of this all the time.
So
I want to ask you, how do you feel?
Why was that put out to slander me? With the
but
word
again,
strange,
you're talking to a person, Josh. Thing. Josh, you're talking to a person that did not slander you. So get over that.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the whole, sir.
But here's what I'm saying.
What I mean.
So I'm asking you, when
you
that
can see
footage
the smear campaign, can't you?
No, it's not a smear campaign. No one is out to get you, and I think you need to get over that. No one is out to get you. Okay, I think you need to recognize that people are questioning you, right? I don't think anyone has a grudge against you, but for whatever reason, people are questioning.
Has anybody talked to me, though?
Here you are. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you.
You are now, and it's a year later, and it's after all this drama. Nobody talked to me. None of you have publicly given me credit for the Mickey Gall fight, the best performance after 10 years.
Okay.
Ask Diego. Is that because of anything? Ask Diego right now.
When Diego was on my show after that fight and going into the Michael Chiesa fight, I specifically asked about you, right? I specifically asked about you. No one told me to ask that question, certainly not Diego. So I'm very well aware that you work with him and that you have influence over him.
Why is it not being repeated to the masses?
Again, how do you want me to repeat? I'm one guy. You could take that up with the people. Take it up with the specific people they have a problem with. But Josh, can I just give you my 2 cents on this? Before we talk over each other for 10 minutes, this is coming across like you are trying to use Diego to get whatever grudge you have out there to the public. Don't come across like that. That's a mistake. Diego is a legend. Let him fight his battles. And if you want to fight your battles, fight it as well. But don't put him on shows and then use that to then get whatever point you're trying to get across. And so here I'm asking you a point blank question. People have criticized your corner work. Okay? Can you explain your philosophy when you are speaking to him like that about breathing and things like that? Why do you do that? I'm genuinely curious about your philosophy in terms of cornering fighters. We are not as well versed in your work because you're relatively new to our space, the MMA space. So I'm genuinely curious if you're able to explain to us your philosophy in terms of how you work the corner.
Have you ever felt invisible pressure? Right? Like the eyes on you, the crowd. You're a performer. You know exactly what I'm referring to.
Right.
It's an invisible thing that most people have no idea about. Now we want to add in physical danger. Now we want to add in the pressure of the lights. Now we want to add in a week of a buildup. Shit, 2 months, maybe 12 weeks. How do you manage that stress? What is the first physiological thing that you have available to you to control that? If you noticed, old reckless Diego was not fully controlling his breathing correctly, not allowing him to have enough oxygen in his brain to make properly coherent decisions in a millisecond, in a fraction of a second. So it is necessary to understand certain breathing techniques when under extreme stress, to how to calm down the central nervous system to allow you to properly process the moment.
That makes total sense.
It also is on my website if you would announce it and let people know to go there.
Okay, again, why is everything so confrontational with you, Josh? Just tell us what the website is. Don't take a shot at me before getting to me asking you about the website.
My point is that there's like the silencing of not saying these things when Diego said these things. And this is my point, is it's not just you, it's not you. I'm not attacking you, and I'm sorry if it feels like that. After I have now had memes and all types of stuff on me, and I'm trying to understand, why is everybody attacking me for helping a man that none of you know how to help correctly? But you want to judge what I've done, yet you're not seeing everything that he's showing you in his transformation.
School.
So was he or was he not calm and controlled in the fight with things flying at him with 100% unpredictability from an unorthodox fighter, different than any other fighter, not only that he has ever experienced, but different than any other fighter in the UFC? Those are all facts, man. And again, if nobody's going to accentuate those things and elaborate on those things, I do have to use these platforms to say it, because if you're not going to be aware enough to say it, I got to spell it out, my friend.
SchoolOfSelfAwarenessWorldwide.com is the website. I want to make sure that everyone gets that and does their due diligence and read about you. Diego, can
Thank
I ask
you,
you
Ariel.
How did you meet Josh? How long ago did you meet him, and what were the circumstances surrounding you meeting him?
Oh, you want the me and him meeting story. All right. That's a good one.
Let's hear it.
All right. Well, I'll first start the story by saying a little something. You know, because there's a lot of people out there that for some reason think that Josh has bamboozled me, brainwashed me, and convinced me to give him all my money. And this is none of the case. He's never asked for a contract. He never asked to be my manager. I asked him to be my manager.
So he's your manager and your coach, right?
He's my manager, my coach,
okay,
my mentor, my the man teaching me things that are more valuable than just lessons of what to do in the octagon. The lessons are what to do when you're outside the octagon, how to be a better person, how to need less and do more, how to genuinely care about the person that's at the lowest, you know, the person with the least money, the person with the sickest health, you know, how to help people, how to heal people, how to just share my light on the world. But let me tell you about how me and Joshua Fabia met.
Please.
So this is about 5 weeks. 5 weeks prior to the Mickey Gallo fight, right?
Okay.
And I'm feeling my body, man. I'm feeling this pain in my body from just the 20 years of doing professional sports, all right? So I'm feeling this pain in my body, my neck. You know, I've had some serious neck injuries. I'm feeling my neck and my traps. And, you know, I got that stiff neck, you know? And I don't know if you ever had it because you're not a wrestler, but it's called the wrestler stiff neck. You just got this terrible stiff neck, and you can't turn your head. You got to turn your whole body, and you feel like a retard. You feel like a machine. All right, and so I'm just like I go to this gym, okay, this CrossFit gym. Randomly, I don't ever go to this CrossFit gym. I go to this CrossFit gym because they're gonna give me a one of those very nice Assault Aerodyne bikes, you know, just a little trade out. They were gonna hook me up, so I'm like, you know, hey, I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna go down there, and I'm gonna take a couple friends. Oh, and they're giving me an ice bath too, a huge ice bath to do my ice baths in. So it was a great deal, and it was a real blessing. So I, you know, took the homeboys, a couple of the homies, you know, give me some muscle, you know, to help me lift the stuff in the truck. And And, you know, it's always good to have some homies around, some backup, some Pekino. All right? And so they're loading up the truck. You know, they have my back. You know, I'm the OG homie. And I just, you know, I was going through a hard time, Ariel. I was really going through some struggles at that time. This is right after, you know, 2017, the hardest year with those back-to-back losses. Then my wife gives up on me, pushes the retirement on me, ends up cheating on me, da-da-da-da-da, you know the whole story, right? But, I'm going through divorce, man, and it's hard. And none of my friends can, like, relate or talk to me about it, like, because they never been through it. They never been through the situation. All the circumstances are different. There's just no relation. You know, they're more just of like, yeah, fuck her, you know, like that type of mentality. No real genuine emotional care. And so I'm like, all right, my neck is stiff. I said, I'm gonna get on the Airdyne. I'm gonna move my body, get my blood flowing, and maybe I'll feel better. All right. And as I'm doing this, I go turn the light off. I mean, I already got a hood on. I go turn the light off because I'm like, you know, I just want to be in the dark right now. Like, that's how dark, like, that's how, like, what kind of place I was in that day. I was having a bad day, Ariel. And I just had anger inside of me, and I'm taking it out on this Airdyne bike. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this little-ass guy, right, and he had different hair back then, so I don't know how young he was. I thought he was probably like a millennial or something. I don't know. I thought he was like maybe 25, 26. I'm like, who is this little guy walking up to me? Like, he's walking towards me. And he's not even walking up to me to, like, confront me, talk to me, anything. He's just walking past me. But I recognize, you know what? Like, my intuition, and I caught it. I was like, wait a minute. Like, I've never seen a man walk that smooth. I'm like, that's a smooth-ass walk. Like, it just seems like he's floating in the air. Like, so I just randomly looked at his ass, and I said, what do you do? Like, almost kind of snobby-ish. Like, not completely rude. I'm not that much of an asshole. I wasn't, even when I was an asshole back then, I wasn't that much of an asshole. But I definitely was firm and assertive and told him, what do you do? And he came up to me, man, and he said, you know, I do this, I do that, and I am an awareness expert. And I'm like, ah, what the fuck is that? I don't know what to have an idea what he's talking about. All right? But I'm like, I'm feeling his vibe. I'm just like, all right, you know, I need someone to talk to right now. The homeboys, they couldn't talk to me. So, you know, this guy is walking up, and he's like, I do body work. He breaks the ice by telling me he does body work and stuff. And so I'm like, all right, and he's like, yeah, that's cool, you know. And I start to dump what's going on in my life. For some reason, I felt the connection in just natural human chemistry to be able to talk. First of all, I'll tell you right now, we're 2 months apart in age. We're both only childs, and so there was a connection there, and we're both wrestlers. So there was already a connection happening. He said, let me see your hand. I gave him my hand, and he started working on just my hands, you know, like telling me about my hands and, you know, where I broke here, broke there. But he started fixing my hands as we were talking, right? So we're talking. He tells me, you know what? I've been through it. I was divorced too. And so, boom, I was like, all right. I was like, now I can talk to this guy. He at least knows what I'm going through, like real talk. Like, I'm gonna talk to this guy. So we're talking. Have a great conversation. I'm feeling better about myself, and I'm not so much in the dark where I could turn the light back on now. And my neck's feeling better. He worked on my neck a little bit. My neck wasn't stiff. And I was like, well, you know, and he's like, well, I could show you some stuff, like some combat, if you like. And I'm like, well, I kind of am, you know, Gio Sanchez, the ultimate fighter. You know, I'm a state champion wrestler here in New Mexico. But I'm always willing to learn from anybody. You never know. What if you teach me one move, and I learned it from Ariel Helwani, and you never know, like, the time and the place, and maybe it saved my life, you know? Like, that's the type of mindset that I had to want to learn, right? So I'm like, all right, well, first I stand up. And he's like, well, let me see your stance. And I'm like, okay. I got in my stance, and basically it was an old wrestling stance, just brought my head up a little bit to where I could see more, brought my hands up to where I could put my chin down, but not standing up straight at all. I mean, like, I was leaned over, hunched over, off balance, slow. I couldn't move. I couldn't move laterally. I could not move forward or back fast enough to not get hit. I was a mess, man. And at the same time, my legs were like hard like a rock, so all the blood was trapped in my legs. And that's what he tells me. He said, dude, all your blood is trapped in your legs right now. Like, you know, like, this is not good. Like, and I'm like, the concept was not hitting with me, Ariel. I was like, well, if you're best and you're trained in conditioning, your heart pumps the blood and it doesn't matter. You know, it goes through. It just goes through the whole body. So I was trying to, like, really come to terms with what he told me. I knew it was, like, legitimately, I kind of, like, it made sense. So, but I was like, all right, well, I was like, you know what, and I was all screwed down. So I was all like, let's move around. Let's move around. Let's show me some stuff. You know, let's get. So you know how it goes, Ariel. Maybe you don't, but this is how it goes, all right? So when you get two wrestlers together, right? And they want to start flowing at a certain speed. He goes, one guy bumps up, one guy bumps up. One guy bumps up, one guy bumps up. One guy bumps up. So this is what's happening. We're on concrete, Ariel. We're on a concrete floor at a CrossFit gym with tennis shoes on. And we're basically going 80%, guaranteed 80%. We're going enough to where this little ninja takes my back. And I'm a good scrambler, man, and I take everybody's back. I'm like, I was like, I'm about to switch this dude's face into the concrete, on concrete, with no shoes. Like, it was ridiculous. I hit a switch. I switched out. As I switched out and got away, he trapped my arm in a technique we call the J, that where my arm was trapped, and if he wanted to break it, he could easily just snap it right out of socket. And I was just like, of course it was like, I was like, Cap, you know, like, okay, you got me. It's just like, okay. And then I changed the subject, and I'm just like, all right, just show me that move. That's the only move I want to learn. That's, you know, that's why I started working with you anyway. Like, you never know, I might learn something cool. That's a cool move. Let me learn that move from you. Showed me the move. Change numbers. Like I said, I was going through so much, through a divorce, man, and being a single father, and doing training camp on your own with no help. Like, it's real shit, man. You don't got freaking much time or energy on your hands. And so I was slacking on calling him, but I was thinking about him. I kept thinking about him, and I was wondering about him. And finally he hit me up, and he's like, fight's getting close. Like, you need to, you know, I want to give you that session, that body session, see how's your body feeling. And came over, worked on me, showed me some movement. He taught me some vision techniques, which are used in combat, not mixed martial arts, in combat. How to use your peripheral vision. Where should your focus be? Just different stuff that no other coach would ever have to take time or energy to do. And so we did this stuff, he worked on me, and every time after he worked on me, we would do he would put a meditation on too. So like this was like really cool. I was like, man, I get freaking guy's gonna show me some movement, give me some body work, and do a meditation. Like I was like, this is legit. Like this is some good stuff right here. Like this is what winners do. I was like, and you know, I don't got to go to four different places to do it. You know, I'm not just trial and error. I've got a real professional helping me. Then all right, I said, this is the guy. We got so close within those final 10 days before the Pacquiao fight, and every day I was training at Jackson Wink. After I finished at Jackson Wink, get my daughter, I put her to sleep, and me and Josh would go to work. 4 hours at minimum would be done at 2 a.m. And I told him, I said, man, I really wish I could have you in the corner, but it's just too close to the fight. But I'm going to get you. I want to take you to Vegas. I want to get you a ticket to come out to the fight. I want you there fight week. He was there with me all fight week, every single day. We did our own thing. I went out there in the Mickey Gall fight, and it was the best performance of my career. You know, going 10 years back, and it all was that vision work to see every punch that Mickey Gall was throwing at me. On that, I just want to say, like with Michelle Piera, you know, people are also not taking into account that this is a man that was not willing to stand there and fight with me. He wanted to hit and run. Every time I went to engage, there was a strategy there, and I take my hat off to him for having that great strategy. I learned from it, and now going forward, he made a mistake. I was given victory by disqualification, but a victory is a victory, and I move forward with my career.
All right. I appreciate that answer. It's great to get that that backstory, Diego. Thank you very much for that. Anything you guys want to say in closing before we say goodbye?
Just thank you, Ariel. Appreciate you allowing us to have space to exist. I'm trying to bring a little light to nobody's really given me a fair shot. There's been a lot of people judging and a lot of people criticizing, but you've never talked to anybody else that knows me. You've never talked to anybody else that I've trained. Like, honestly, it has been a smear campaign for almost a year now. And a lot of people have not been able to find this information that I have created, this method, so people can help themselves. And interesting enough, you know, people like Joe Rogan and Whitman and these people, they've inhibited people from being able to see with their own eyes and hear with their own ears. And I appreciate you allowing me to speak, and I commend you for checking me. You're absolutely right. Maybe I am sounding a little crazy. But also, this is the first time I'm being heard, and still nobody's said a nice thing. Not one nice thing, man. And it's interesting that the criticism is coming from people that don't help anybody. So why would you attack me?
And the thing is, you know, why would you attack me? Diego Sanchez, the UFC Hall of Famer, the legend who has had 32 fights in a row in the UFC. You know, like, why attack me and my credibility of what I say of somebody? Why say, oh, he must have CTE. It's all those brain hits that he has. It's been 1,000 fights. Like, why not just take my word for it, man? I said, this guy helps me. He's my best friend, my manager, my mentor, and just meet me in person and feel my energy. and see what has happened. Just be aware, and you know.
But it's also rude to say that Diego's just a believer when I've worked with thousands of people around the world. So are they all just believers? Are the military and the government just believers? You see how rude and condescending that is to put out in the media, and that's what's being repeated by the layman fan that obviously won't do their due diligence because, like you said, the short attention span. So when, again, it's interesting that Joe Rogan would use a piece of footage that's exactly the movements of which how Diego was able to defend himself. The little video he used to try to clown me is exactly how he was able to get in and make the few pieces of contact he could on a.
And not to mention, the video is not for professional fighters. It's for anybody and everybody.
Understood.
So when Joe's critiquing the video, what's his MMA background? And what's this? Oh, and they're making cracking jokes, him and Aljamain Sterling. This is, you know, it's just a low blow for no reason.
I got you.
And because Joe Rogan has such a great following, with all these people getting Joe Rogan tattoos and sending him free stuff every day, like, no one will even listen, man. Like, they just say, oh, well, Joe Rogan said it, and he took DMT and a hyperbaric chamber, so you know, it must be right.
So this is what I mean. Hold on. This is what I mean. Wouldn't we really identify that as bullying? And the fact of the matter is, when it's so malicious that you'll use an out of context piece of material. I mean, there's tons of material on the internet out there of showing me pretty amazing, showing some pretty, you know, jaw dropping stuff, but you don't want to show that. You show this, and not only is it out of context, but you make sure to do everything just right and say, cornerman, don't say my name, but you made sure to put it in the metadata so it comes up first when you put my name in YouTube.
I get it. Guys, I hope...
Nice. That's called character assassination and slander.
I can't speak to that. I have not done that, and no, I can only speak for myself.
But this is all I'm saying is,
I get
you
it.
Know you have been a
I get yeah. it. I get it. I understand, and I hope fair. That you feel like you have had a chance to at least say part of your piece. You can't say your full piece.
We appreciate you.
All right.
Appreciate you, Ariel, because this is huge for us, man. And it's just, you know, the bully being bullied. And you know, if you don't speak up, you're never, ever going to get truth, man. And that's what's happening nowadays. A lot of these bullies just think, oh, well, we're just going to bully the bullied who's getting bullied. They just say, okay, you know, so, I can't really say much about it.
Diego.
So real quick,
yeah.
I want to leave this little story so that we can elaborate it, and it's over, okay? There's an interesting thing with nature. It doesn't really lie. And you could take 10 white chickens and introduce another white chicken with just a black dot of feathers. And anybody that's been around nature enough knows what happens here. The first thing that happens is the group of all white chickens go to the chicken with the black dot, a chicken that is a little different. And they come over and they start to peck to remove the feathers. This is called conformity. And the chicken that's being pecked, the one that didn't do anything, was born this way, has typically two ways to react. The first one is to fight back immediately. And what typically happens is you end up seeing a dead chicken, you know, from that mob mentality, that group think, that malfeasant guided. And then there's another way. There's the way that the chicken just turns its head and allows the bully group to conform them, remove the black feathers. And the chicken survives. It looks a little different. It definitely looks a little ragged out and beat up. And when the new feathers come back, they come back black because that's its nature. And what happens now again is continuously a group of chickens come to remove it. And over time, that chicken is conditioned to believe it's okay, that what's happening to it is okay. There is a third option, Ariel, and that is what I provide. See, I was that little runt natural chicken that nobody wanted to exist. And as much as everybody started pecking and pecking and pecking and pecking, over time, you build a callus.
Josh and Diego.
Sooner or later, the chickens start breaking their beak. And this is what gives power to people to not just conform and allow bullying to happen to them. And on that note, I will say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Guys, thank you. All the best to you. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Ariel. Have a good day.
All right. Well, thank you very much to Josh and Diego for their time. We appreciate it very much. Now, there's only one proper way to transition from that interview to another, and I think it's with, as I said at the top of the show, the pound for pound nicest and perhaps most talented person at ESPN, the legendary, the one and only, the inimitable, the inconquerable, the pride of Westchester, Florida, the great Antonietta, aka Tony Collins, joining us from Las Vegas. Tony, how are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like I need you in my life every time when I'm, you know, pick me up. I just need to hear that.
I'm glad that you're on the show finally. I've wanted to have you on for quite some time, and this is a perfect time because you're in Las Vegas right now for Wilder Fury 2. And I was just curious because I've never had an opportunity to cover a big boxing match before. I've obviously covered a lot of MMA matches, but or MMA events, I should say. But you were there yesterday at the Grand Arrivals and just the whole scene. Could you tell us, what is the buzz like for this event?
Oh, my gosh, Cheryl, you definitely have to put this on your bucket list. It's like no weather. This is the Super Bowl of NFL fans. I mean, the finals of NBA fans, the World Series. Right now, on a Tuesday, well, yesterday and Tuesday, the excitement and the amount of people that showed up to just see Fury and Wilder walk in, you know, maybe answer two or three questions was insane because, I mean, it was just the excitement is palpable. Where you talk to people in the streets and elevators, they all want to know, what do you think? What do you think? Because, you know, who's got the advantage? And then, you know, talking to the fighters, I'm with Team Fury. It's just a complete different level. Like, what you see on TV is one thing, but then you see a different side of them. And it just, that's why I love boxing, just the rawness of it.
So when you say that you're with Team Fury, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah. So with Team Fury, it's for SportsCenter. So Bernardo Osuna, he's my colleague, and he is covering everything related to Deontay Wilder. I'll be in charge of Tyson Fury's side in the sense of, like, every day I go and stalk him and find him and ask him either, you know, spinning forward stuff like today, like yesterday was like, hey, how are the next 24 to 48 hours? Okay, now today for the press conference, it's going to be a lot of questions towards like, how is the game plan? You know, because he has had an intense training camp. It was close to the media. He's going through some adjustments coaching wise. I mean, game plan wise. So just how everything is settling, because this is totally different than his first fight with Wilder. You know what I mean? Different mentality. But you know what the awesome part of this is that as much as, you know, they both are fighting for their lives there on Saturday night and for their oath, for their pride, they respect each other very, very much.
How do you feel about Tyson Fury? He's quite the character. He says many outlandish things at times. How do you feel about him as a figure in this sports world?
You know what? It's so hard for me because, yes, I read the interesting articles that come out and of his quotes and everything, but you've interviewed him. He's actually very articulate and very calm. Like with the Tyson I've gotten has been a calm, articulate, very, he knows what he's doing. I feel like he knows what he's doing. He's very open. And that's what people like about that. He is raw. He is honest. What you see is sort of what you get when it comes to the human aspect of it. And a lot of people can relate to it. So for me, it's hard because you know, he's wild in some of the things he says, but I see where he's coming from, and I can only admire the part of him being so honest and raw and just, you know, giving it his all and everything.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the last big event as far as boxing is concerned that you covered in Las Vegas, was that Triple G Canelo?
Yeah, so I was stuck, like I feel like every time, I'm sorry if I'm here, all the noise. I've been in Bristol since then just because of different changes for me and with SportsCenter and taking those responsibilities, but yeah, this is the first time since then.
Can you compare the buzz? I know we're kind of midweek, so it's hard to get a true grasp until Friday, but I've heard from people, ticket sales didn't, you know, move as much as we would have liked. It's not the same. There's no, you know, Mexican presence like someone like Canelo, so it doesn't bring the same kind of passion from the fans. Can you compare the two from, like, Wednesday to Wednesday? What was it like back then compared to this time?
Yeah, I do agree with that to an extent because, while yesterday was fun, it was wild, there were a lot of people from the U.K., no, it doesn't compare to what I saw with, like, I could be wrong, but this is what I saw when I was here. Like, when Canelo came, there were mariachi bands and La Raza was there, man. They're, like, Mexicans will unite and no matter what part you're, if you're near, you will go there. And it's a passion. It's our sport. So there was more of a hype in that sense, but I don't want to take away from the hype from here because this fight is unlike any other in the sense of all the promotion that they've had, all the publicity. I mean, they had two Super Bowl ads. That's never... Bob Arum was saying that... I mean, this is the Bob Arum, the Hall of Fame promoter that, like, used to promote for Muhammad Ali, said that he had never seen something like this, having two commercials in the Super Bowl. So, I can't compare it. I think when a Mexican fights, it's a complete different vibe. But this, I don't want to take away from it because it is impressive as well here.
Yeah, I noticed that about the Super Bowl ads. That felt a little surreal to see a boxing commercial during the Super Bowl. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you are the pride of Westchester. MMA fans might feel like that is a familiar name or city or town, I should say, to be exact, because the great Jorge Masvidal, or I should say Jorge Masvidal. Did I do that? Thank you. He is from Westchester, too. And so one thing I've always wanted to ask you, Tony, what is Westchester like? What is that place? Why is he so proud of being from Westchester?
You know what? Westchester is a hardworking middle-class community, and I love it. Like, a lot of my... It's very normal. Like, what you see... The whole thing of what you see, what you get, where people are just like you and me. There's nothing fancy about it. It's just raw. I mean, we have La Carreta, which is a great Cuban restaurant, and we have Sergio's, and, like, the food, it's a melting pot. It's just so low-key, too, and it's right next to, like, cities like Coral Gables and... You know, you're 20 minutes from the beach, and it's all the glam. But, you know, Westchester's just raw, and I'm proud of it because it's just, I don't know, I love it. It's my hometown, and Masvidal bringing it to the level that he has, it makes me so proud and so happy. So every time I see it, it's like Sawesera power. So Sawesera means southwest, but we say it kind of Cuban slang. So Sawesera, you know, and I just love it.
Do people really say super necessary there?
People do say it, actually. I'm not even kidding. It's sad. So I was like, oh, man. So you just got to embrace the uniqueness and quirkiness of Miami. Because Miami, I swear, I feel like it's a country of its own. So it's so many cultures and so many different things. It's a melting pot. So, yeah, people come up with crazy stuff down there.
So Westchester, is that Miami or is it two separate towns? Like, is Westchester in Miami? Like, can you claim Miami if you're from Westchester or is that pushing it?
Yeah, you claim. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how do the people in Miami, your people, how do they feel about what's happened to Jorge? Because it felt like for the longest time, no one cared about Jorge. No one knew who he was. No one paid attention to him in Miami. Outside of Florida, it seemed like he was, you know, getting the respect that he was due. But now, considering what he's turned into, top five biggest stars in the sport, are you sensing when you go back home, like, do people know who this man is? Are they giving him his props?
Oh, my God, completely. You know what I feel like? I'm comparing it now with Deontay Wilder when he goes to Tuscaloosa. I mean, he is the guy. Yes, we know Tuscaloosa for Nick Saban and football, but, like, that's their boy. Wilder is their boy, and that's how we take Masvidal as. Like, he's our boy. He has stayed true to himself, and has that boy been through things, and man, did he not give up, and man, is he deserving of everything that comes good his way. And I feel people see that, and everywhere you go, you know Masvidal. They're like, dude, no, that guy is raw. Like, that guy was in the street of his camp, you know what I mean? Like, everybody knows about that, and to see him under the spotlight, he deserves it. Like, you couldn't be happier or prouder of someone like that. And you know what, and being as unique, because you know Masvidal's intense, but it's okay, that's who he is, and he owns it and he loves it, and that's why we love him.
Do you also eat pizza by putting two slices together? Do you do that as well? Is that a Westchester thing?
No, I don't. I don't know what the hell that is, but
okay.
I see it. Like, I have to try it. Do you do it?
No, I don't. I don't know where this came from, but he seems very proud of the fact that he does it.
Apparently, it's a thing now. I do, though, if you ever want to try. And I'm just me being fat. Salt and vinegar chips with hot sauce in them. And then
wow.
You take the bag. There you go.
Oh, you put the hot sauce in the bag, and then you
in
shake
the
it.
In the bag, and then you shake it, and then it's everywhere. And then you just have an amazing vinegar smell with hot sauce.
Have you ever had ketchup chips before?
No.
That's a big thing in Canada, ketchup-flavored chips.
Ooh.
Think
ooh,
about
ooh,
that
ooh.
One.
And you've had cortaditos, right?
I'm not familiar.
Coffee.
What is that?
Oh. Oh my God, you have to tell Masvidal. You have to do a tour with Masvidal. Like, it's like in Scana Carreta, it's like a little espresso shop, but the Cuban version, amazing. Amazing.
Wait, so this is a special kind of coffee?
Yeah. Why are you up?
Wow. I just like all the words that you say in Spanish. That's always very exciting. Now, and this isn't Cassidy Hubbard that we're talking to, right? This is Tony Collins?
Oh my God, you know what? Oh my gosh, two gods, man. That is the longest joke. I don't think Cassidy enjoys it that much, but
why?
I don't know. I think he thinks it's not silly, but it's so silly because he literally thought I was Cassidy back in the day. It was like 5 years ago when we all had brown, long hair, you know.
I'm talking like real inside Lebatard jokes here, but for those that don't know, Stu Gatz of Lebatard fame once spoke to Tony for quite some time and thought that he was speaking to Cassidy, and it turned into a whole thing. By the way, do you prefer Tony or Antonietta? And am I saying that correctly?
No, you said it correctly. I like Antonietta, but nobody can ever say it. And I think people like they stumble, so they're like, ah, Tony. So I mean, it's fine. I feel the love still.
Now, what is the rest of the week like for you as far as your duties are concerned?
So right now we are going to head into their last press conferences, and it's a pretty interesting situation, and it's really awesome to see Fox and ESPN work together to have meetings, to have show meetings with both companies, and you know, everybody's under the same page, and it's been working out so well. So that's fun to see everybody coming together. And I mean, props to Mike McQuaid and his team, because the way he set everybody for success for this. So we've been in meetings. We're going to go to that. They're going to have a show together. And then tomorrow, it's kind of like the low-key day. But then Friday, the weigh-in, Ariel, the weigh-in, because Sugar Hill has been saying that he wants Tyson Fury to come in at 270, but that's unheard of for him. His first fight with Wilder, he was 256.5. With Otto Valine, he was 254.5. So it's interesting to see what the strategy there, and it is being so open about it. So we'll see. The weigh-in is going to be exciting.
And as far as fight night goes, do you get to go in the locker room? What are the duties?
The duties are pre. I think I might be switch. I might be alternating because Kate Abdo of Fox is also doing Tyson Fury. So yeah, I mean, and I love her and I respect her, and she's the goddess, so she can totally do that. So she's doing that, and maybe I'll be doing SportsCenter hits throughout the day, and as well as for post-fight, and I get to actually watch the fight, which is amazing, so I'm excited.
Wow, okay. I know you have to leave now. Thank you so much. People don't know this, but I'll just say it on air. We got you very late. I appreciate your patience.
Oh, my God.
You are incredibly talented. Next time, we'll talk about some of the work that you're doing as far as UFC is concerned, because we're trying to get you to do more, the pre-fight shows and all that stuff. We could use a little Tony in our lives as far as the UFC world is concerned. But keep doing your thing. Keep up the great work. And congrats on your recent new contract. And congrats on everything. You're awesome, Tony. Thank you.
You're awesome, too. Love you, man. Take care.
All right, there she is, the one and only Antonietta Collins, who, by the way, if you recognize the voice, as I said at the top, she did the voiceovers for the Helwani Nose Awards in January. So that was a nice new wrinkle that we added to the show. I enjoyed that very much. And honestly, you can kind of tell there if you have never seen her on SportsCenter before on ESPN, just a wonderfully kind person, just a really, really nice soul. And she does phenomenal work, and she's out there in Las Vegas with the great Charlie Moynihan, producer extraordinaire, covering this big fight. And it's one of those fights that I just can't wait for. And Saturday is going to be so much fun with Hooker and Felder in New Zealand, followed by Fury Wilder. These are the nights we dream of as combat sports fans. What's better than that? MMA and boxing. I never have subscribed to the notion that the two can't coexist. I love boxing. A little nugget just for the podcast fans. I've been training in boxing. Chael kind of let the cat out of the bag on one of those Super Bowl Radio Row interviews that he did a couple weeks ago. But I've been doing some boxing twice a week in my town since August, and I've loved it. And it's really given me a greater appreciation for the sweet science, but also for fighters. I've always appreciated fighters, and I think most people know I respect the hell out of fighters. I have so much respect for what they do and what they put on the line each time they walk into a cage or a ring. Love fighters and could never even dream of doing what they're doing. But for many reasons, a little stress relief, a little fitness, but also to just gain some appreciation for what they go through. I've started to do this, and I've been doing it since August, and I love it, and I look forward to it, and I crave it, and I'm sad when I have to miss it due to traveling and whatnot. So I think this has even increased my level of interest in fights like Wilder Fury. The first fight was phenomenal, and I think this one's going to be better because I think Fury's in better shape. The 270 thing is fascinating because of how big that is and how much bigger it is than the first fight. Two MMA connections, by the way. As he noted on Monday's show, he's working with George Lockhart. Fury is MMA nutritionist to the stars. He's worked with the likes of Conor McGregor and many others. Has been on my show many times in the past as well. And also he has hired the great Jacob Stitch Duran to work his corner as a cutman, which I think is very interesting as well, because in the Otto Valine fight, he got those 47 stitches afterwards, that big gash. And I thought his corner man that night saved his undefeated record. And I thought that he would, you know, erect a statue in his honor. In the end, he ends up hiring maybe the best cutman in the history of combat sports, Jacob Duran, who is a friend of mine, pardon the pun. And that's an insider joke for those that don't understand what I'm talking about, but has worked with the likes of the Klitschko brothers for many years. So that's a nice little wrinkle going into this fight. Two undefeated fighters, a rematch, lineal heavyweight championship. What more do you want? Followed coming off of Felder Hooker, which I think could be a fight of the year with huge implications at 155. Great night on Saturday. I can't wait. I hope you feel my excitement. For now, though, time for our good pal, TST.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
So, Era, you've taken up fighting. Is that what I heard?
I've been dabbling. I mean, I have no, you know, I have no plans to actually compete. But as I said, it has helped me in many different regards.
I think we should fight because I've taken up kickboxing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've gotten into mixed martial arts.
How long have you been doing this?
Just a couple weeks. Well, let's see. I've been doing a bunch of like shadow kickboxing for years, but I'm actually getting into actually hitting people now. So,
can I tell you what my dream matchup is?
Troy Farkas versus Ariel Helwani.
Troy Farkas, aka TST, versus the head of the School of Self-Awareness, Joshua Fabia.
Wow, that would be quite the matchup.
I feel like that would be quite the matchup.
I feel like he has a lot more anger than I do.
It is bizarre how angry he is, considering the fact that he's preaching, you know, breathing and being relaxed and whatnot. By the way, just curious, what did you think of that interview?
That was quite a lot. As I've told you, my MMA fandom does not, or knowledge of the sport does not predate 2019. So Diego Sanchez, UFC Hall of Famer, I hadn't heard of him until a few weeks ago.
Jesus.
And so Josh, it's always fun learning the history lessons here, but the entire interview was so wild. There were so many times where I'm thinking, like, how did we get to this point? What are we talking about? And I love the contention. That was like riveting podcast listening. So
thank you, glad
everyone, you know, I'm glad that you were able to defend yourself and come at him. I like that, seeing that side out of you.
Well, thank you. Now, what is your tip of the week?
Okay, so my tip of the week here is that, so I'm going on vacation. And me and you talked a little bit about this.
Where are you going
this week? I'm doing a little Scandinavian tour. I'm going to Norway, Sweden, Denmark. I'm seeing a concert, Halsey in Oslo, Friday night. Shout out Halsey. I love you. And I can't wait to see it.
Wow. And you're a big Halsey fan?
Big Halsey fan.
What's her biggest hit?
Her biggest hit is Without Me.
Can you sing it for a sec?
Tell me how it feels sitting up there. Feeling so high. Yeah, so that great song.
And is she from Scandinavia or she just happens to be there?
No, she's from New Jersey.
Really?
Yeah.
Which part?
So the part of the reason why her name is Halsey, because she grew up by Halsey Street, which is a famous street like in that area or something. I'm not quite sure where in New Jersey she's from, but like very close to the city. And also Halsey is an anagram of her name, Ashley.
Oh.
How about wait, that?
An anagram of her name, meaning is it back? No.
No, like if you take all the letters of her name.
You mix it up?
Ashley, and mix them up. Halsey.
That's called an anagram?
Yes, that is an anagram. There you go.
I thought anagram was.
I thought you were the journalist here. You're supposed to know the grammar stuff.
Isn't anagram like when you put the letters down vertically and then you do A is for always?
No.
What is that called?
That's called something else. Hmm. Well, I forget. But anyway, my tip of the week here.
Yes.
Is so, I travel very lightly. You have to as a minimalist when you were traveling abroad. So I'm going just a backpack and, you know, you say, hey, like, if you're a minimalist, are you only wearing like one pair of pants and one shirt the whole time? Like, no. You get a big backpack, which I do. I'll carry on my back the whole time, and I will have several pairs of clothes. However, the trick is on your flight is wearing as many clothes as you can. So I'm going to Norway, so I'm going to have my hat, gloves on me, coat, my sweatshirt, my pants, maybe another pair of pants on too. I'm going to have shoes.
You're going to wear two pairs of pants on the plane.
I'll probably take them off on the plane, but then when I have to get off the plane, I'll put them all back on. And yeah, so you got to layer up so that you can travel as
lightly
as
possible. Aren't you going to be very sweaty?
No, I'll be just fine.
And isn't that the opposite of minimalism, to have so many layers?
No, that is not how minimalism. I hate when there's these minimalist haters out there like, oh.
Hater? I'm not a hater. I'm just trying to understand. Hey, don't be like Joshua Fabian and just make these sweeping judgments on me.
So minimalist packing. People always want to overpack things, travel lightly, wear all your stuff on your flights. Bring a water bottle all the time. Bring all your little personal care products as small as possible. Bring one pair of shoes. Bring a towel that you can throw away when you're there, one that you don't care about. And also, for me, if you're traveling in hostels, bring a lock. You want to lock up your stuff.
Oh, that's right. So you're staying in like a real hostel.
Oh, yeah. I'm staying in a bunch of hostels.
Oh,
yeah, like
gosh.
Where you're going like 8 beds deep in a dorm with random people from across the country. World.
What are the can you tell us where you're staying?
I will not reveal where I am staying.
Well, not the actual hostel, but what's the name of the town?
I mean, so I'm doing a night in Oslo. I'm doing several nights in Copenhagen.
Wow, this is like Nicholas Dalby, Jack Hermansson country.
Yes, exactly, my guys. Then mm-hmm. I'm doing a night in Karlstad, Sweden.
Wow.
And I know you're a big coffee guy, Ariel, and Karlstad happens to be like the coffee capital of
Sweden.
Oh,
my gosh.
So
the reason I ask is, could you imagine if you're staying at one of these, hostels, if you will, and someone comes up to you and says, hey, I recognize your voice. Are you TST of the Ariel Helwani's MMA show podcast fame? Wouldn't that be something? Let us know if that happens.
That would be something. I don't think that will ever happen. I don't know if that would even happen to you in Norway.
You'd be surprised, my friend. I've been to Sweden for one event, Alexander Gustafsson versus Anthony Rumble Johnson at the Ericsson Globe Arena in January of 2015. And let me tell you, it was hard to walk the streets of Sweden.
Wow. Yeah, I was walking the streets of New York one time with you, and we were just getting stopped left and right.
Well, you just said it. Now, what exactly is the tip? The fact that when you go on a trip, you have to wear a lot of things on the plane? This is your tip of the week?
No.
This is a horrible tip.
When you're going on a trip, you have to pack very lightly, wear as many clothes as you can on your flight, and then pack the rest of the clothes in your backpack, and hopefully it's not that much, so you can make room for the other stuff that you have to bring, your personal care items, and whatever else it is. Like, I'm bringing a little exercise equipment because I'm a freak, and I have to bring, my big bag of almonds to carry me for sustenance.
Why don't you just buy the almonds there? You don't think they have almonds in Denmark or Sweden?
They are very, very expensive there. This is America's like the nut capital of the world.
In more ways than one.
Wow. All right.
Sorry. I mean, you just kind of walked me right into that one. That's it? We're ending like that? I had so much more to ask.
Okay.
What about?
All right. What do you got for me?
I just wanted to know, how many short stories will you be writing on this trip?
Oh, I'm bringing my notebook with me as well, and I have a lot to write about, Ariel. There's a lot going on in my life right now, so I can't wait to be inspired, by the fjords of Norway and Sweden. And again, like I said, there's a lot going on right now, so I'm very emotional.
So you're abandoning us for a full week?
Full week, yeah.
So no show next Wednesday, no show next Monday. You're not really a presence on the Monday show, but the Wednesday show, I will be solo.
I don't know. I might make an appearance. We'll see.
Perhaps we can call you up.
You could call me up. We can make that happen.
Will you have a phone there?
I will have a phone, and let's just hope you catch me at a time when I'm not, you know, engaging, you know, because the time difference where I'm engaging in, you know, a dinner where the Scandinavians like to indulge with a liqueur at night.
Oh, stop
for
it.
Dinner.
You'll be eating at the hostel in the common room there. You'll be having, like, probably, I don't know, some Swedish meatballs that you bought at the corner store for €3, heating them up. That's what you'll be doing.
First of all, no. They eat a lot of fish, so I'll be eating a lot of fish. And actually, the Scandinavian countries do not use the euro. They use the kroner.
Oh, geez. Okay, see? This is why I wanted you to stick around for a little longer, because I had a lot of questions.
Do you have anything else to ask?
For the most part, no. I think it's been a good day on the show. I think we accomplished a lot. I'm very up to speed on the School of Self-Awareness. I think the booking of Tony following that double interview was brilliant producing on somebody's part. A little yin to the yang, if you get what I'm saying. And I think that I think it's time to go. I think it's time to go. I want to wish you a safe trip. Tomorrow you're leaving?
I'm leaving tomorrow. Yeah, can't wait.
Wow. I'm very sad about this. You know, I don't like change. In my 11 years in the podcasting business, it has been a revolving door of producers and colleagues and coworkers in my life. And I have separation anxiety, so this type of thing makes me nervous. You'll probably meet someone at this concert. You're going to the concert alone, right?
Solo, baby.
Yeah, so you'll be at the concert, you'll meet someone, you'll fall in love, you'll open up your coffee shop / barbershop in Oslo or some other place in Scandinavia, and then we'll never hear from you again. And it's been a nice run, and you'll be left with thoughts of Joshua Fabia and Diego Sanchez and Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal, and the list goes on and on. For now, though, we hope that you do have a safe trip and that you return in 2 weeks' time, and we'll be missing you here. And I'll say to everyone out there, thank you for continuing to subscribe, rate, review, download, all that stuff and more of the podcast. Love doing the Wednesday show. Love all of you. Enjoy what should be a phenomenal Saturday night. I'm off to Oklahoma City. Nuggets, Thunder, Friday night, ESPN, sidelines, baby. I'll talk to you next week.